Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox, and I'd like to welcome you to a special three-part podcast series on U.S. and EU regulation pertaining to electric vehicle batteries. In this, I'm joined by Pamela Fierce-Walsh. In episode one, we'll look at U.S. foreign entities of concern for EV battery production. In episode two, how the Inflation Reduction Act impacts these issues. And number three, the EU battery regulation and battery supply chains. I know you'll enjoy this special series. First, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Pamela Fierce-Walsh. She's a prominent voice in critical mineral supply chain issues and a recognized leader in policy development, ESG issues, and international affairs. From 2017 to 21, she powerfully drove the reorientation of U.S. diplomacy towards prioritization of mineral supply chains as the U.S. State Department's senior advisor for critical minerals. She coordinated the Departments of Commerce, Defense, and Energy as they worked together to support national security and economic council agendas. In June 2021, she played a key role in shaping the Biden administration's 100-day supply chain review on building resilient American supply chains to improve competitiveness for clean energy and technological advancement. She regularly advises senior U.S. officials, private sector actors, and foreign counterparts. In 2023, Pamela joined the Board of Impact, a nonprofit organization focused on empowering communities by greater governance of the natural resources they rely upon. She is currently the CEO of PFW Advisory, an LLC based in Washington, D.C. In this concluding episode three, we look at EV battery regulation and battery supply chain issues. I know you'll enjoy this final episode. Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back for our final episode with Pamela Fierce-Walsh and our discussion on EV batteries. Pamela, first of all, welcome back.
Thank you, Tom. I love being with you.
So today we're going to take up the topic of EU battery regulation and battery supply chains. So could I start with asking you, what's the regulation at issue?
Yes. So in July of 2023, the EU battery regulation passed and it creates categories for batteries with their own special requirements. So think portable batteries, car batteries, electric vehicle batteries. Everybody's got their own set of regs. And I should say it applies to every battery put on the market. So if you make a battery in Brazil and it's going on the market in Europe, it's subject to these regs. It also creates a battery passport and it imposes supply chain due diligence obligations, which your compliance listeners are going to love.
So could you expand on what is the battery passport and what was something called the Battery Pass Consortium?
Yeah. So big shout out to my friends and colleagues at the Battery Pass Consortium, because basically the idea of a battery passport is that your product goes to market. It's got a QR code on it, and it tells you all of this information related to your battery. That's really tough to do. The Battery Pass Consortium is full of companies and some government agencies in Europe and civil society actors who got together to figure out how they could actually operationalize this and put forth some guidance. It's an incredibly impressive body of work. I really encourage listeners who are interested to follow up there. But basically, the actual battery pass itself, while it is required effective 2027, it is still under prototype and under development. The information that has to be included in the passport, which the consortium was really important for digging through, is you got to know the manufacturing, you've got to know the supply chain due diligence info, carbon footprint, materials and composition, the resource efficiency and circularity, and then performance and durability. Yeah, so it's a lot. It's a lot going into the battery passport.
So are these things that typically you would expect a manufacturer to actually have, not, if not knowledge and visibility into, as a part of their overall manufacturing process?
Not necessarily. I think that the more forward-looking among them have had a grip on their supply chain and the data going into this. But I think if we're looking at something like supply chain due diligence, where they're asking for even deeper understanding about what's the risks going into their supply chain, I don't think that your average manufacturer had to know that or even cared to know that. They may have for sustainability reporting or because it made sense in a sustainability image, but that didn't necessarily mean they had to go that deep. Once you've got a QR code that says, this is the due diligence we did, I think the efforts get a lot more intense.
Was there an upcoming deadline for regulation of calculating the carbon footprint of batteries and certain recycled content targets?
Yeah, August 2024. So it's very soon. And also setting recycling content. They've got their work cut out for them. Again, that's going to apply to cobalt, to lead, to lithium, to nickel. Yeah, the battery minerals, Tom, they got to know.
I think that's something you can help them with.
Thanks.
Supply chain due diligence. First, I wanted to ask you if you could go through the requirements of this and then ask you to really compare and contrast what you've seen either in the Inflation Reduction Act or any of the other U.S. regs around this so that a manufacturer might be able to go under a more stringent standard so they can cover everything.
Yeah. Supply chain due diligence is not a new concept for mineral supply chains. Beginning as early as Dodd-Frank 1502, which covered a set of minerals coming out of Eastern Congo, and then expanding when the Europeans added their own minerals regulation that got into conflict minerals, there's a whole slew of OECD regs or policy guidance, rather, around responsible mineral sourcing. So the OECD is this organization that principally thought of as like a developed country club that works on economic issues and policy recommendations for advanced economies and just economies in general. They have this thing called the OECD due diligence guidelines. And it essentially means like it's five very basic steps that get very detailed depending on the topic, but you look at the risks in your supply chain, you develop policies to deal with those risks, you assess the risks, and then you start over again. And it's just about continuous improvement. So supply chain due diligence for some minerals had been doing this for quite some time. You've got other initiatives like the Responsible Minerals Initiative that came online to help companies achieve these goals. And companies have been adopting these for a long time. The difference is that if you're required by law to conduct supply chain due diligence into everything that's going into a specific product, and everything going into a specific product is pretty vast, the impact and the requirements of that supply chain due diligence multiply. Effective August 2025, producers and producer responsibility organizations are going to have to adopt and then communicate their due diligence policy for batteries. They're going to have to reveal their systems for due diligence, identify the risks, and then design solutions. So that five-step process, they're going to have to do it, and they're going to have to declare it.
You used a term I'm not sure we have used before, and that was producer responsibility organizations. Could you tell us what that means?
Yeah, I think it's akin to an industry organization or industry association. It has a special term under EU law. They call it a producer responsibility organization. You could think of it as like a standard setting body.
The third party verification, will that be done internally as an attestation, or will there be a notified body or a body who will perform an independent third party verification? How do you see that shaking out?
That is, I think, yes, it will be required. They will have a third party verification and it will be necessary. How the EU is going to accredit third party bodies, I'm not entirely sure, but it will come into effect in August of 2025. Something that the European Union did when it was passing its own conflict minerals regulation was around accrediting certain bodies to say if a certain manufacturer meets the standards of this body and that body agrees that they've met the standards, then they can sell on the market. It's something like that. So you have an outside party who checks under the hood, proverbially speaking, looks at all the bits and bobs, says, yes, you've met the standards, you're good to go. And the European Union can say, okay, since you've met that standard, you're good to go here too.
Pamela, do you see these requirements under the battery, either the battery passport or the supply chain due diligence requirements, as something akin to what currently exists in the United States, or is it different? Does it supplement things? How would you assess that area?
Yeah, I would say they're pretty closely linked cousins. There's a lot of overlap. The work that you would do to comply with the battery passport in Europe would be quite similar to the work you'd produce to attest that you could sell and get the tax credit under the Inflation Reduction Act for an EV battery. The difference comes down to some of the declarations and then some of the standards. So the Inflation Reduction Act is principally concerned with where your materials are coming from or where they're processed or who owns the processing and the source. With the European passport, they're interested in a larger totality of factors like the sustainability score and the reusability score, things I think that we'd perhaps put under like a sustainability or an ESG rubric. But you can imagine that to calculate that information for the European Union, you'd probably have to know the stuff you'd need to know for the Inflation Reduction Act. So there's a lot of overlap to be had there.
Let me turn to a different issue, either around policy or interface with the governmental bodies who may regulate that. And as I play in anti-corruption compliance, largely governed under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, there the regulators are the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Department of Justice. They take to the position that we are, at least at the DOJ, we're prosecutors, and we're really not here to help you specifically with questions or things like that. You can self-disclose, but that's a different type of relationship. At the Department of Commerce, who largely governs export control, they have individuals who you can literally pick up the phone and call and say, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? Under AML, it's still being shaken out, but that's the Department of Treasury. And I wanted to use that as an introduction to ask, can companies really work with some of the regulatory bodies here? And can they get sort of more towards the Department of Commerce, BIS, pick up the phone and call us and talk to us, as opposed to prosecutorial mindset of the Department of Justice? How do you assess that? Or how would you help a company guide a company through that issue?
Yeah. First of all, I think it's important to state from the outset that we're not talking criminal prosecution in the case of these supply chain regulations. So the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act has, they're very insistent on getting the bad guy and rooting out bad behavior. The stuff related to Inflation Reduction Act or the infrastructure law are really about reorienting supply chains. So unless you're deliberately sourcing from an organization that is considered an FEOC and then actively trying to hide it and then actively trying to take tax breaks from that, you're probably not in criminal territory. Just to state that at the outset, will the US government have a place where manufacturers can convene or ask questions about supply chain compliance? My guess is that we will get there. It will be, I would think, under the Department of Treasury at the IRS, because we're talking about a tax system. But there's going to be a lot of close and continuing cooperation between the Department of Energy, where all of our minerals policy is largely nested, in conjunction with the Department of Treasury, the IRS.
And how do you really assess the relationship between the industry and the either the Department of Energy or other regulators? Is there an opportunity for really policy, if not assessment, policy discussions? And how would you help counsel a company around that? Should they join an industry trade group so their voices are larger, or they get to speak as one? Or how do you help companies through that issue?
Yeah, it's a really great question, because I think companies, I think auto companies in particular, have been grappling with supply chain issues for quite some time. They understand that where they source their materials is important. Perhaps the biggest thing that the biggest oversight that I see with companies is that they don't understand quite how profoundly the United States takes the supply chain imbalances in this manufacturing space. We're in an election year. I don't care who's in the office come next January. Concerns around supply chain dominance by any of those FEOCs is not going to go away for the federal government of the United States. And I think companies quite often misjudge that or think that they can play a regulatory environment. And I think that would be imprudent.
Pamela, I wanted to thank you again for taking the time to visit with me. This has been a great series. Once again, can I ask you, if our listeners wanted any more information on yourself or perhaps get in contact with you, what would be the best way for them to do so?
Oh, thanks, Tom. I love being here. Please reach out to me at Pamela Fierst Walsh on LinkedIn. I would love to hear from you. So thanks a lot.
Well, thanks again. I hope we can continue this conversation.
Absolutely. Anytime, Tom.
This is Tom Fox again. I hope you've enjoyed this three-part podcast series I put on with Pamela Fierst Walsh, where we took a look at current issues in EV batteries for the compliance professional and for the business executive. I'd also urge you to reach out to Pamela and link with her on LinkedIn and continue the conversation with her. If you're interested in this topic, or if you're interested in doing a special multi-part series, please contact me at tfox@tfoxlaw.com and let's discuss what the podcast format and my network can do for you.